Today's show is brought to you by LMH Strategies, Inc., a leadership, management, and human systems consulting company.
There's no path, you make one for yourself. And even with how businesses are run today, it's like, if you don't like the way somebody's doing something, make your own way. If the path is not there for you, you say, hey, what can I do to make this my own thing? So really, the coaching really streamlined from my brother's team. It was saying, hey, I'm developing a skill and you meet the right people. So going from youth clubs to certain private schools that have money to pay coaches, and then just trying to keep moving up, elevating.
Welcome to Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete, hosted by Glenn Hames, where we share tips and strategies that help amateur athletes, coaches, and teams achieve their on and off the field athletic goals. Our show discusses topics important to the elite amateur athlete. Whether you play football, basketball, soccer, or any other active sport, either on the field or court, our experienced industry experts, coaches, and former professional athletes will provide firsthand insight on topics that will give athletes who desire to play sports at the highest level an edge over their competition, and undoubtedly will help turn their athletic goals into a reality. When there's a new season, there are new goals. What's your field goals? This episode, I'm going to start from where I left off from our last episode, and that is, today is the season finale of the Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete. And let me clarify, season finale, not series finale. And I know that this season went by so fast. Well, maybe for y'all it did, but it's been a long season for me, and I is tired. It's just time to take a little hiatus, and then, of course, I'll come back stronger than ever for season 3, which would be around the second Thursday in May. So I'll try to announce that date in the future, but it'll be easier for you to just hit that subscribe button so you can get an alert when the new show drops. And while we're talking about following and subscription, be sure to follow My Field Goals on all of our social media platforms. But I have to thank all of my season 2 guests for making it a tremendous success. And I've got to thank even you, my loyal listeners, as well as our new listeners, for spreading the word about our podcast. And for those that listen to us overseas, what up? I see you, and I appreciate your support too. But I want to give a special shout out to my editor, Joe Woolworth from Relevant Media Solutions, who literally has a black belt in audio production. And what y'all don't know is, Joe came in and took over audio production for me around a quarter of the way in season 2, and he's been killing it ever since. All that creativity you hear, the editing and sound quality, that's all him. And I absolutely love it because he certainly made my life a whole lot easier. So appreciate you, Joe, and all that you do. And finally, the Field Goals merch is here. And I'm so excited about what we have and what we have coming. So thank you to all those who supported us so far. But check it out. Signing day in basketball and other sports is coming up in April. And if you're a focus-driven athlete, you need to come get some of this Field Goals drip so you can show the world you're about making statements both on and off the field and court. And by the way, we'll have some new products and designs launching by then, so make sure you visit our social media platforms because we're going to be posting all our new releases there from time to time. And do me a favor, why don't you go ahead and post some of your pics on our sites too, so we can see how you're rocking your focus-driven athlete gear. All right, for the last time this season, let's get ready to take the field and get on with today's show. Now, many of you may know Method Man for his laid-back yet hard-hitting rhymes and flow, but actually, before Meth became a hip-hop legend with arguably one of the best hip-hop groups of all time, Wu-Tang Clan, and before he scored hit after hit on the charts as a solo artist, that the Italian Stallion spent his days on Long Island scoring goals on the lacrosse field. Yep, it's true. Mr. M-E-T-H-O-D, man, played lacrosse from grade school to junior high before moving to Staten Island and playing on the New Dorp High School lacrosse team. And apparently, Mr. Meth was quite good, too, and was especially fond of taking faceoffs as a midfielder. Who would have thunk it? But you probably know the most decorated lacrosse player of all time is Jim Brown. Now, although Jim went on to play professional football in the NFL, many believe he was even a better lacrosse player than he was at football. During his junior season at Syracuse, JB was a second-team All-American in lacrosse, followed by a first-team selection his senior year. He once scored 43 points in 10 games for the Cues as a senior, making him the second highest scorer nationally. He was inducted into the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame in 1983, and many credit his ability on the lacrosse field with helping the sport's popularity grow significantly during the 1950s. But today, part of the reason for lacrosse's rise towards mainstream popularity, not just in America, but globally, is the inclusivity of participation. Much like soccer, the game doesn't rely solely on physicality and athleticism, making it an even athletic playing field to suit the pace of the participants. According to U.S. Lacrosse, participation among all groups increased by 32% between 2008 and 2018. Even the NCAA reported that lacrosse has become the fastest growing sport. During a recent study, they found that between 2003 and 2018, Division I men's lacrosse grew 61% in participation and Division I women's lacrosse grew 97%. So it's evident that lacrosse is a sport that's on the rise. Now, today's guest has certainly helped foster the lacrosse craze, especially in the DMV area. He was a midfielder at Bethesda Chevy Chase High School and was recruited to play for Howard University's club team. His coaching career was launched in Bethesda Lacrosse, where his team was division champs. He started coaching local, middle, and high school lacrosse, competing in some of the most competitive conferences in the country. He was the former head coach at Bowie State University, and he works with public charter schools and recreational centers in the DMV area, where he helps develop after-school lacrosse programs to help kids get exposure to the game of lacrosse. He's even gone international, teaching local kids in Dominica, just off the coast of the West Indies, the game of lacrosse, and was just recently hired by Morehouse College to coach and advise their lacrosse team. So my guest today on the Field Goal Spotlight, Ryan Jones, coming up next on Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete. Welcome back to another episode of Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete. And we've got one of the hardest working coaches that I've ever seen joining us today. Ryan Jones, welcome to the field.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, man. Absolutely. I'm glad that you was able to get on. But Ryan, tell me how you're doing, because, yo, you are one of the busiest coaches that I've ever met. I mean, like, you are everywhere. You're coaching everybody. And I want to just start off by saying congratulations, because I know you just got hired at Morehouse College, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Super appreciated to the program for having me. I'm just proud to be able to coach a couple kids that I coached back in elementary school. So a decade of hard work actually coming together.
That's good stuff, man. That's good stuff. So Ryan, before we get started, man, we got to give a huge shout out to our boy, Delvin Champagne, for making the connection way back last year.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Delvin the dude with DJ. Shout out to my man, DJ, man. One of the best kids, one of the best lacrosse players at 2030 out of Pete, Maryland. So,
wow. Yeah. I didn't even know Delvin was such a lacrosse enthusiast, but I know he's all in, and he's also got his kids into it as well. So I thought that was just pretty cool.
No, absolutely. DJ, when I met DJ, was at a PG lacrosse clinic that was held by Next Level. So we picked it off then. Delvin Champagne just kept rocking with it. DJ was great at it, and now he's flourishing.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So appreciate you, Delvin. Good looking out, my man. All right, Ryan, there's the whistle. And for us, that means it's time to get on the field. So are you ready to take the field?
Let's do it. Always ever. Built Jones Tough, baby.
No doubt. All right, let's jump into it. So, Ryan, I got to give you your props, bro, because you're absolutely killing the lacrosse game right now. And it's like every time I look up, you're coaching or you're training some kids somewhere, whether it's stateside or in another country. Why don't you just go ahead and get us kicked off and tell us how you got into the space of playing lacrosse when most kids grow up wanting to play the big three sports?
Honestly, it starts with my mom. She really had me grow up knowing or believing in anything God did. She would say, hey, if you want to go play basketball, you can go play basketball. If you want to go play rugby, you can go play rugby. If you want to go play lacrosse, play lacrosse. So it's really her putting that into my system of you can do whatever you want to do as long as you're passionate about it. Mm-hmm. So big shout out to my mom. As far as lacrosse goes, big shout out to Jeff Wagner. He was a guy trying to get more black kids playing in the Silver Spring area, Montgomery County area. Without him, this wouldn't have all happened.
Mm-hmm. So you growing up in the DMV area, did you make any attempts at playing any other sport, or was lacrosse like love at first sight?
Oh, yeah. I went through the ringer. I played basketball all through the Allen Iverson time. Everybody had the cornrows back then. Everybody's rocking jerseys and whatnot. And I stopped growing. And I ran into KD. He was playing at run and shoot. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Okay. All right. We got to think about another sport. But my family came from Alabama, so we were really football people. So I played running back throughout high school. I really wanted to proceed to play football in college. But lacrosse was a new love at first sight.
Yeah. Because County, man, that's basketball haven right there.
Yeah, PG County, I mean, DC, like, you have the big private schools over here that play, but, you know, you got to know what you want to do really early.
Oh, for sure.
And back then, people were still coming out of high school. So that was during the Kevin Garnett time. Yeah, LeBron was just coming in when I was in middle school. So it was the last of a great era.
Yeah, yeah. So where did that passion of playing lacrosse come from?
I just wanted to make something out of yourself. When you're presented with something, like I said, Jeff presented a game, presented a stick like I loved it. It had the hit of the football. It had the picks and rolls of basketball. Mm-hmm. It had the rules of soccer. I just loved it. I just wanted something to do. And as a kid, it's like, okay, let me try this. And when people open up doors, you try to just exceed those expectations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what was your first exposure to playing this game? Because it's not like when we were growing up, you see a lot of lacrosse games just being played on TV.
Exactly. It was over at Gwinnett Caulfield Center, right off Grub Road at Silver Spring, Maryland. Right off Grub Road at East West Highway. He literally walked into a football meeting that we were having. Our football coach actually introduced me to him by the name of Joe Allen. He's the football coach over at BCC at the time. That was at Chevy Chase High School. And he was like, hey, anybody that wants to come out and play, here's a stick. And it started there. Mm-hmm. So Jeff would give me a stick and have me come out and play. They had a whole great program that was going. He was taking kids from Silver Spring, getting them to Bethesda area and playing.
So did you start playing in junior high school or middle school, or did you start playing in high school?
Yeah, it was more or less like high school. I was a kid that was, hey, I want to really play something. Mm-hmm. I was a junior playing on a JV team. Mm. Yep. And I was like, hey, I'm going to build my stick skills up, you know, get my grades right, and then just keep fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And lacrosse was different back then. A lot of the times you could sit there, I would just sit there and wait for kids not to show up to games. And I would just sit there all day like, hey, you guys need an extra person. I'll run with you. I got to play with great schools like Landon, Gonzaga, you know, those schools that had great programs, that had good summer leagues. I would just sit there and just wait for the other kids not to show up.
So you didn't actually try out for the team. You just kind of almost walked on. Is that what I'm hearing?
For the high school team, yeah, no, everybody has a trial for their high school team, but the club ball part, lacrosse wasn't what it is now. Like, so over the summer, people have summer leagues, and you would just sit there and say, hey, you want to add me an extra player? Mm-hmm. So just sitting there getting that same basketball feel, that open run style feel.
Yeah.
That was basically it.
So do you feel like you got into it because of the pace of the sport, the fact that you could hit, you can throw, you can shoot, or was it something different? Was it the excitement? What was it that said, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep going at it.
Absolutely. I mean, it was exposure. Like, on top of that, the area I'm from, it's a huge hotbed. Like, Bethesda, Maryland, that's a huge hotbed of lacrosse. You have University of Maryland down the street. You have Georgetown University down the street. You have UVA not too far away. You have Baltimore up the street.
Johns Hopkins. Yeah.
you have Johns Hopkins, so it's a real hotbed area. So Jeff would take me out to games, and I would watch. Back then, Paul Rabel was still in high school. Kyle Harrison was just finishing up at Hopkins, so it was a great time for lacrosse. Chaz Woodson was shining a light on the pro stage, so it was like, whoa, these guys are playing. I can do this. Mm-hmm. Watching Kyle Harrison and those guys, I was like, I want to do that. I want to be like that. Mm. That's what I. And wow. At the same time, the people that make these changes as far as like what your path is going to be in life, everything's not perfect, but you make what you can out of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said that you played midfielder at Bethesda Chevy Chase High School. And let me say this, for those that are not familiar, that's where the rich kids go to school.
Absolutely.
But seriously, how did you end up there, and what was your high school athletic experience like?
I'll say, but again, kudos to my mom. She was a single mom. She worked super hard. She put me to school. We lived in an area, like a 1-2-bedroom apartment that I got to go to school in the Bethesda area, right at Silver Spring. So it was really her planting that seed of, hey, I want to change my son's environment. Mm. So coming from the inner city, moving out there, that was all for her. She moved and changed all that stuff. So again, kudos to her.
Yeah. But you said you played football, you played basketball, now you're into lacrosse. What was that experience like playing at Bethesda Chevy Chase?
It was cool. I ended up never not playing basketball there. I ended up playing football there. It was great, but that wasn't the main sport of the school at that time. Mm. Like, we will get crushed there. You have a couple touchdowns, but, you know, then life happens. So you change. And you look at, hey, what sports can I get into? I also play club rugby. Mm-hmm. One of the characters on our football team, he was from New Zealand. And he was like, hey, this is rugby. And I'm like, hey, let me give this a try. Best sport ever. So I would play rugby and lacrosse at the same time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How'd you do that?
Because rugby was a club sport. And at the time, lacrosse was offsetting. So there would be days where I would just pack a bag and it would be like lacrosse in one hand and rugby in the other hand.
Wow.
So I'll just hop on the train and then go to a rugby game or walk and take a bus and then just get there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just hungry for more.
Awesome. So during your senior year, you guys lose only 3 games that entire season, and you only lost 1 conference game. And all that was under your coach, Alan Poho. And you had a national ranking listed at number 44 in the country. So I want you to talk about that historic year and what that meant for you as a senior.
It was awesome. It was a good group of guys. I wouldn't change that for the world, because it was still, we beat Whitman, our super rivals that we never beat them. And at that time, lacrosse, it wasn't what it was today. So people put a fast bricks together. We had a couple All-Americans on that team. So just wanted to be a part of a winning team. That was real it.
No, that was a winning team. And how deep did you guys go in the playoffs?
We lost in the regionals. It was Wooten.
Oh, yeah.
But just getting there, they had a really extremely strong team. And public school lacrosse on this side was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Gotcha. So what was your college recruiting process like?
It was me. It was really trying to find schools. And we looked at schools, but grades come into play and grades come into picture. Mm-hmm. Where what happens when you're worried about football school? It's not the same as looking at Johns Hopkins. And what did you set yourself up for success? And that what leads me into my next part of life. It's like, what happens when people make sure your child is prepped for success?
Mm-hmm.
So junior colleges were a big thing for me to fix my grades, go there and then say, hey, I'm going to go somewhere else and play. Mm-hmm. But during that time, it took a turn, because then my little brother, he was interested in playing. So mm-hmm. I was playing. I got to play at Howard, help keep their club program going. And then in 2010, my brother's team took off, and we went from the worst team to winning the championship in the Bethlehem Lacrosse League.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So did you do a gap year between college and your senior year, or did you just go straight into junior college?
No, it was a gap year. I was working for the military, got to do some MWR work. I believe in a lot of supporting our troops. So my little brother's in the Navy. So.
And you kept on playing while you was in the services too?
Yeah, we came back and we ended up playing in some men's leagues, some really extremely competitive men's leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really sparked it. People were like, hey, you're good at coaching. And at that time, it was making sure my brother had what he needed to be successful.
Yeah.
So really putting yourself on the back burner and saying, you know what? let me big up the next person.
Mm-hmm.
So my little brother's success meant a lot to me.
What a great story, man. So you ended up staying local and going to Howard University in Washington, D.C. and playing club ball there. What was the reason behind that decision versus just going somewhere else and starting somewhere fresh new?
That's where I was from. I grew up in Howard. When I was in elementary school, that was my home. Like walking up and down Georgia Avenue, that was my home. Georgia Avenue Day, that was my home. Yeah. The carnivals, that was my home. So it was like, hey, cool, you could do it. It's one thing if you do it somewhere else, but what happens when you do it at your own home?
Yeah. I know Howard University is in the MEAC conference, but not all the MEAC schools have a lacrosse team. So what other schools did you guys actually go up and play against?
Well, we got to play against American University. Yeah. We got to play against Morehouse's Club. We got to play against Morgan's Club. A lot of these like club teams. And that's something that's not said. There's a lot of great lacrosse that's out there. Not just D1, D2, D3, but you know, there's D1 clubs for lacrosse that are great. You got guys at Maryland that don't eventually make the team, but then they go play on these club teams with guys that could go play at other schools, but it's just like schools fit. So there's a whole nother league that's extremely competitive in the lacrosse world.
Mm-hmm. How long was y'all season?
It was probably like three, four weeks.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
3-4 weeks.
The season?
Yep. Because it's funding. It was funding. What happens when kids have to streamline it? Players, presidents,
mm-hmm.
players, coaches, and presidents. You just got to make sure you can like have something. We're just happy to have some. Let us play. So
you guys played competitively for 3 to 4 weeks. And then after that, what was next?
Then it was done. Then it was on to go back to coaching. So my thing was, hey, make sure my brother was okay. Make sure we have a team. And then we got to go coach somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was always boom, 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 boom. You always have to have something that makes it work.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So I'm always curious when the athlete makes that transition from high school to now playing in college, because both experiences are just so vastly different from each other. And athletes coming out of high school only has a point of reference of their high school experience until they take the field of the court for the very first time and start playing against other athletes who are just as good or better than they were. So do you remember what your welcome to college lacrosse moment was like? And even though you play club ball, there's always an epiphany or eye-opening experience that every athlete goes through. They'll be like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing what I'm doing.
No, I mean, absolutely, especially doing it at Howard. Like, that was a great moment. The goals I scored there, those are burned into my brain for the rest of my life. But it's a thing of growing. It's, hey, you got to make sure that your teammates know how to do things. What happens when you don't have a program that's like everybody knows how to play? What happens when you have to build it? What happens when you have to get teammates to get up to go to practice, get refs? So it wasn't just playing, it was the admin part too. So making sure teams can come down, making sure refs are there, making sure, you know, your team has water, and then executing your playing.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the extremely valuable things that I learned.
So where did all your teammates come from? Were they students at Howard University, or were they a combination of college kids as well as locals, or what was it?
It was all college kids. Mm. It was all college, all different branches of life. But yeah. It was something that I'll never replace.
Mm-hmm. Good experience, man. Good. So Ryan, every athlete that I've spoken to, whether their playing career ended in college or in the pros, they all mm-hmm. say life after sports and just making that transition back into the world is tough. And so typically they end up doing something to keep them close to the game. Did you experience some of those same types of emotions after you stopped playing club ball? And was it at that point when you decided to start coaching and training kids in lacrosse?
No, I mean, absolutely. It was shot up because of my brother. Like my brother wanted to play, and people kept saying, you're good at coaching. And Matt always wanted to keep that up. So you do that. You do take odd jobs to keep coaching and then building up and saying, okay, cool, let me stick with this. Because even now I have kids that are in college. I get to coach kids that I coached when they were 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And then seeing the decade hard work pay off. So you try to keep that love of the game. At the same time, you try to see what didn't work for you and then try to build that for the next generation, the next future.
Yeah. So how'd you get into coaching? Because I mean, you just don't stop playing a sport and then all of a sudden you know how to coach. So how did you get into this space? Because even though the athletic training circuit is so saturated, it seems like you've remained above the fray, because I believe you just, sounds like you just carved us out a special niche for yourself, and there isn't many trainers doing what you are doing, and especially in this sport of lacrosse.
There's no path, you make one for yourself. And even with how businesses are run today, it's like, if you don't like the way somebody's doing something, make your own way. If the path is not there for you, you say, hey, what can I do to make this my own thing? So really the coaching really streamlined from my brother's team. It was saying, hey, I'm developing a skill and you meet the right people. So going from youth clubs to certain private schools that have money to pay coaches, and then just trying to keep moving up, elevating. So I was blessed enough to be able to go back to coach model high school. I was blessed enough to be on championship teams and for high school coaches, but then building up HBCUs and DC public schools, those were huge. That was a huge drive, because I was like, wait, there's a whole bunch of people that don't get to expose to the sport because of the money. And if money's not the problem, then quality coaching. So what happens if you can bring quality coaching to the people that actually want to give it a try?
So what was your first coaching experience like?
I mean, it was great. I got to coach my brother. We were the worst team ever. Like we were the worst. We were like the Bad News Bears. And piece by piece, we started getting better week by week. And I looked at him and I was like, hey, if we make a run by the end of the season, we could be in the playoffs in the championship. So we just kept working. A couple family friends joined the team, and it was beautiful. I remember not only picking my brother up, but a family friend I would drive over, pick him up, go back home. One of the kids had a brother that recorded skateboarding. And I talked to him. I was like, hey, come record our lacrosse team. And he was a middle school kid making $40. He was happy. So that kid now, he's in California. His whole business now is video photography. So not only the sport part is like, wait, you just created jobs or help another kid see what their passion is. They can make a paycheck out of it.
And so how long did it take for you to build up those club teams into a winning team?
Club now is a different game versus club back then. Club back then, you could have a couple strong players or parents and make a run. Where club lacrosse is now is even at the second grade level, I'm coaching second graders that have 10 times better IQ than a lot of my high school teammates did. So as the sport evolves, the game evolves, the IQ evolves. So it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of practice. Like if you're not practicing three times a week on the same time having outside trainers, that you're not going to be successful.
So I know you said that you built these programs from the ground up. I'm just curious to know, where exactly did all the funding come from?
Half of the time is funding as far as the public schools or the youth programs. Those are two separate things. The youth programs, you can 501c3 those, and then people invest in those, versus the ones that are, hey, school driven. You got to find people that have some money and then, you know, say, hey, can you donate to this brand? I'm blessed to run with a couple of parents that invested in DC public schools and get them back going after COVID. They probably donated $5,000 to a nonprofit.
Yeah.
To help. So you meet good people along the way. Yeah. Some people that see your drive and your passion. So a lot of the times the proceeds that I make, I actually give back. So probably, I want to say like 50% of all the stuff I do as far as workouts, lessons, stuff like that, go back to the community.
Nice, nice. So Ryan, there's the horn, and that means that we're at the half. And when we come back, I want to pivot from your personal story just a little and have you share what it takes to be an elite lacrosse player. So let's take a quick break and we'll be back on the second half. How's that sound?
Awesome, man.
All right. More with Coach Ryan Jones after this.
LMH Strategies is a leadership, management, and human systems consulting company that specializes in business transformation, program management, and supplier diversity. The professional team at LMH Strategies brings a diverse range of national and global experiences in various industries to help your organization achieve its objectives and deliver measurable solutions. The LMH Strategies impact results in improved workforces, better businesses, and a brighter world. Commercial, government, and higher education markets trust LMH Strategies as their business partner. And the team at LMH Strategies welcomes the opportunity to earn your trust too. For more information, go to lmhstrategies.com.
All right, Ryan, I want to get your take on this. In 2020, and this was right at the COVID year, U.S. Lacrosse reported that lacrosse was the fastest growing sport among youth demographics. Why do you think that is? Because I don't know anything about the sport, lacrosse, except for the basics, right? But in your opinion, what's the appeal for athletes to start playing this game?
It has all the components of everybody else's sport. So you can really cross train. It's a great sport. If you're a wrestler, you have a place. If you're 7 foot tall, you have a place. If you're 4 feet tall, you have a place. It's up to the coach to find that place that you fit in. Also, the Native American game. And one of the best stories they told was about the game that was played with the animals and how like the smallest animal made the biggest difference in that game. So the biggest appeal is what happens if you have a kid that wants to come out and play football. That's a safety. And they love hitting. Awesome. You have to use a lot of backpedaling, a lot of deep back moves to actually play lacrosse. What happens when you have that point guard that has great court vision? Hey, they can set a pick and set up the whole offense and balance the field. What happens when you have a person that is saying, hey, I'm not really great at defense, but you know, I'm an offensive minded person. You can sub them all at all, like in hockey. So it has every other sport all put in one.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually read that too. And let me tell you, I've got friends of mine whose kids play lacrosse and they absolutely love it for the exact same reasons that you just stated. It has every single sport rolled into one. And it's probably the only sport that I can think of that has a combination of football, basketball, baseball to a degree, as well as ice hockey.
That's it. I loved it just because it kept me. She going, what kid doesn't like a ball and a stick? Like, you can't go on the playground and say you never picked up a rock or a stick and stuff like that.
That's
like,
right.
What happens? Everybody gives it to you and says, you know what? Hey, here, use this and play. You can shoot as hard as you want to. Right. Oh, what? Hey, boom.
I'm laughing because I remember reading that Method Man was a lacrosse player, right? When he was
Absolutely.
Growing up in New York.
For life.
And so he said the exact same thing. Like, man, all that aggression I had growing up in New York City, man, I could just take it right all out on the lacrosse field. And what kid doesn't like being able to run and throw a ball and a stick or run with a stick?
Absolutely. And now more and more of these professionals, celebrities are coming out and saying, hey, I play lacrosse.
Yeah.
But it wasn't so highlighted back then. Like, I'm saying a decade of work, but what happened in the 80s? There's more lacrosse players. There's people that we don't know, but now the social media and the internet is where it is. People are now opening up and say, hey, I did play this in my childhood.
Yeah, for sure. Now, it wasn't around when I was growing up. I mean, I remember playing lacrosse in PE class, but it was not a sport at my junior high school, my high school. And in fact, it wasn't even a sport in the state of North Carolina. And I don't want to speak too quickly about that, but from what I can remember, I don't think any high schools or junior high schools in the state of North Carolina when I was growing up had a lacrosse team. Colleges was different, but in your primary schools, I don't remember seeing that.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very little. Yeah. But the sport is not just growing nationally. It's also growing internationally. And I know you've traveled to other countries teaching lacrosse. How'd you get into teaching and training kids internationally? And just talk to me about what that experience was like.
No, it was amazing. I mean, I felt like it was for the people because a lot of people kept asking me, hey, what is that? I would walk around with the lacrosse stick on. So just went around, talked to the community, and the kids gravitate to it.
So there are over 36,000 students playing lacrosse at the college level, and the college programs are growing every day. And I know from living in the D.C. area for over 20 years, Maryland and Johns Hopkins and Duke University are some of the more popular lacrosse schools. But like you were saying, we're now starting to see HBCUs getting into the mix. And if I believe there are like over six or more HBCUs that now have competitive lacrosse programs, and even legendary all-star Chaz Wilson is coaching at Hampton University. Talk about the growth that's taking place at HBCUs and the fact that you're starting to see more African-Americans now playing the sport.
It's beautiful. You want to see people that, you know, look like you and play the sport. Because at the same time, I grew up in, it wasn't a lot of black kids playing. You would go to games and sometimes you see one other kid. And you're like, hey, how come, you know, we don't play the sport? So it's good to see, you know, the HBCUs taking this on and great coaches like this coming in and taking Hampton where they are now and recruiting and everything for the next generation of coaches, because you don't know what you don't see. Mm-hmm. So hats off to him, salute to him and all the HBCU coaches around, because you guys are bringing up the next generation of coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just big ups to the HBCUs who are implementing lacrosse teams on their programs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know you've been very active in working with a lot of programs in the DMV area, from middle schools to universities. You're also, you used to be the head coach at Bowie State University in Bowie, Maryland, and now you just got hired at Morehouse College in Atlanta. I'm just curious, how did those two opportunities come up?
Again, but that's hats off to the NCL. The NCL is the only sixes league that's doing it. The National Collegiate Lacrosse League, they approached me and said, hey, we want to start a program. And I ran with it. I was very appreciative of the opportunity and getting to build a whole program. So utilizing all those skills, like I learned back from the youth days, the admin jobs, like it just putting that on the place. So we went from not having a program at all to making the playoffs in the NCL. Mm. And that was huge, because those kids got to take the Team Maryland bus. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff was held at the University of Maryland. They got to stay and meet up with the Rutgers University program, which was huge. They got to stay in the same hotels as the traveling visiting teams did. So it was a really great and cool experience.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I believe that you're going to start seeing a lot more HBCUs incorporate lacrosse into their programs too.
Absolutely. And that's the hope and goal.
So when you're working with athletes, what are the three or four basic skills that you teach that every lacrosse player should strive to master?
They should have a right and left hand. Whatever you're not good at, you got to improve, because when nobody else is watching, that's when you put in the work. So if you're righty, you need to make sure you have a both right and left hand, being able to hit the ball. And that's where it starts right there. Being able to take a lacrosse ball, hit it off the wall, and be able to catch it right and left hand.
And when you're working with an elite athlete for the first time, what are you looking for, and what are some of the first things that you do to help them?
What is your goal? Is your goal to get faster? Is your goal shooting? Is your goal dodging? Is your goal playing better defense? So really understand like what the kid needs. Mm-hmm.
And so how do you go about trying to cultivate their skills?
Just seeing how their shots, three-quarter shots, overhand shots, shooting on the run.
Yeah.
Their moves, split dodge, rolling, and then test their little IQ. If it's a group setting, do that.
Yeah. We had Coach Sasa Andrade on not too long ago, and he's soccer coach at Shaw University. And he was talking about some of the things that were important when he's teaching some of those kids in soccer. And for him, it was that first touch when the ball comes to you, and being able to have adequate leg strength, not just for running, but, you know, for shooting and scoring. So I'm curious what that is for lacrosse. And I'm sure you got to have good arm strength to be able to shoot to be able to shoot the ball.
Absolutely.
Okay. But I'm thinking about what those important things are, in addition to being a lefty and a right, that is just going to be super important, that is going to separate a lacrosse player from the rest of the pack.
I mean, it comes down to being confident. A coach can draw up everything, you being efficient enough to execute. And then what happens, we have to improvise. So what happens when the coach draws up a great game plan, but hey, that goes out of the water because they're shutting it down. Can't go on the run and improvise, but that's the free ball mentality. Mm-hmm. That's where that basketball mindset kicks in. I'm going to try to break this dude's ankles. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to hit or fit this pass in a little spot that's not going to move. Hey, I'm going to make a dodge or make my defender commit to me early. That way somebody else is open on the backside. Mm-hmm. So all those little things, making sure the IQ is down, making sure their stick work is down, that way they go into wherever they go into confident. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at yourself in the mirror and say, hey, what am I weakest at? And going and attack that weakness.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure as a lacrosse coach, you're able to identify some of the weaknesses in your players too.
Absolutely. And that's the part where you sit down with them and say, hey, I need you to get this better. Mm-hmm. And having honest conversations, even at the second grade level. You turn it into a game, you try to make it fun for them, but at the same time, you're like, hey, if you can get this down, there's no reason for me to pull you off the field. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, Timmy or Tommy, if I have to pull you off the field, it's not because, you know, you're not a great player. It's because somebody has your strength. Mm-hmm.
So given the rigor and the pace of the sport, how do you go about preparing them for the mental and the physical that the sport brings?
That's player by player. You analyze and see, hey, what can I do to help this player, or who can I put in this person's place or a corner to help see this and see? Because I don't know everything about the sport. At the same time, there's somebody else that does. So the person that I know that is a good fit for another program, say, hey, go look at this guy. Or, hey, go look at this school.
Yeah. So we got listeners whose kids are just absolutely killing it in lacrosse. And coincidentally, I know you're going to Morehouse, but some of those kids live right there in the Atlanta area too. So for those that may be listening, what can those players do on a daily or weekly basis to improve their skills that will give them that edge over their competition?
Practice. And I know it sounds cliche, but you got to outwork everybody now. Like as a coach, I feel like a lot of the kids, they have parents that are giving them everything, but you got to work for stuff.
Yeah.
But what happens when you have a travel team or you have workouts and stuff like that, but what are you doing on your own? So there's a lot of great lacrosse players from the South.
Mm-hmm.
But don't know it because they get bumped up to the North and it's like they go to these good powerhouses like Ohio State, Maryland, Stevenson, Salisbury, Tufts, and they don't stay around in the area.
With the surge that is happening with lacrosse, that only means that competition is going to increase for these athletes too, to receive athletic scholarships, even if they play at HBCUs or Division II, Division III programs. And this may sound like a silly question, but seriously, how good do you have to be to play college lacrosse?
It's you got to be cold. It depends on what division, what league, everything matters. Not everybody's going to be a Division I player. Not everybody's going to be a Division II. There's a lot of D3 programs, I feel like, that need to be playing D1. So it's about getting that perfect fit for you. Is education more important in the sport? So some people play on teams, but they never get in. So you pick something that worked best for you. Mm-hmm. So now lacrosse teams have 50 players on the sideline. Do you want to be a practice player? Or do you want to go where a place where you can play?
Right. Yeah. So regardless of division, college coaches look for core elements on the field when recruiting student athletes, and that's in all sports. You being a college coach, I want you to speak what those core elements are and what it is that you are looking for in a potential recruit.
Education. Let's start there. It's a student athlete, not athlete student.
Right.
That 3.5 GPA, that matters. Because again, the end goal is a degree. The end goal is to try to get you out of school without any student loan debt. So I can't do that without those grades being there.
Right.
So we can try to get some extra grants and some extra money so you get to leave and start your life.
Mm-hmm. So that's number one. What's the woman number two?
How good of an athlete you are. Like, as far as, is this person a person that needs the support of his teammates, or is this a person that needs support of an entire organization? So a mix between that, and then I'll say really honestly, more important than that is the character of the kid.
Mm.
Because you can be a great athlete.
Yeah.
I'll put that number two. I'll scratch my number two and put that there and just say the quality of the kid, because there's plenty of times where I'm like, hey, you have everything down, but then
they're not coachable.
You have a terrible attitude. Yeah.
Yeah.
So being coachable is huge. What happens when you come from a big lacrosse school, but then people aren't used to the way, you know, your style is playing? Mm-hmm. Are you going to consistently fight them, or are you going to embrace them?
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I hear those same three answers from different coaches of different sports all the time. Grades, coachability or attitude, and playing skills.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So because I know you coach at a lot of camps and club leagues, and I know you even played on some club teams yourself, how important are camps and tournaments and clubs and showcases for recruitment?
I mean, they're important. You want to definitely make those relationships. You want to see your talents go up with the best of them. And again, it's like, where is your public school or league a great enough place for you to just leverage off of that film or video? If not, then cool. You go out and do those showcases. So, because some kids, there's a couple of homeschool kids that I have that they don't have a team to play on. They go play club, and that's their model. Mm-hmm. So other schools, they're huge and great public schools, but there are other public schools that don't, that have good programs. And then there's these elite private schools. So I would say fit the model that fits your situation the best.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got to ask you this. What do you enjoy more? Do you enjoy coaching or training? Because it seems like every time I look at your social media pages, it appears that you're at your absolute best when you're out there training the next athlete.
I mean, that's the fun part. It's one thing if you can have Built Joe's Tough is all about not just me being that coach, me getting you to a point where another coach wants you. That's what I get a kick out of. When I see another coach say, oh, I want to take this kid now. Hey, I did my job. I gave that kid the success, the foundation they need to be successful for the rest of their career.
Yeah.
And that goes with anything. That goes with reading, math. You need a teacher in elementary school to make sure your foundation is secured. Everybody has one of those people that put their foundation in a place where, oh, I can go off and do everything. The one thing you don't, like I personally don't like to see, is when a kid has been playing lacrosse for a while and then comes back and say, well, I never learned this.
Mm.
And it's like, oh man, this is something I'm teaching my second graders. I wish I had found you earlier.
Right. Yeah. So speaking of that, what role should the high school coach be during the recruiting process?
Right then, it's look for that diamond in the rough. Like, you're going to have your kids that play lacrosse, but find that extra wrestler, find that extra football player, find that extra kid that walks the halls or something like that, that needs an outlet. So that outlier player that's really saying, hey, I want attention. Hey, I'm a good athlete. People just may not know it. So I would challenge people to look more, not what's in front of you, but, you know, in your schools, like, what's that diamond in the rough?
Let me ask this question again, because I'm actually talking about a kid that's already playing lacrosse in high school and mm-hmm. and trying to play in college. So what should the role of the high school coach be doing the recruiting process?
Putting their kids for success, like setting them up for success, like saying, hey, I know you're thinking about this school, but, you know, look at this school. Like, don't put their goals too far out. Don't make their goals too low. Like, sit there and have an honest conversation with them about what their goals are and what your goals are, and say, hey, let's meet halfway. If you want to get to this school, this is what I think you should do. And at the same time, hey, if they be honest with them, if they don't have that connection, just be pretty honest. But it goes back to the grades, the type of style that kid plays, what system they're going to. Like, if you go to a school and they have already three lines of attackmen and you're an attackman, you know, you're not going to be playing. But find that school that fits you.
Yeah. So I was talking about lacrosse not necessarily being a popular sport when I was growing up, right? How would you advise those playing lacrosse that may live in areas where the sport is not as popular to get themselves out there in order to get noticed?
Travel, showcase, use social media, use everything you can to be seen. If you live in Atlanta per se, but there's a tournament in New York, find a way to get up to New York.
Yeah.
Find a way. If you got to take a train. If you can't afford a train, take a bus. It may suck, but it's like, hey, if you're really hungry about this, go do it. Go find a way. Make a way. So utilize social media, because this thing right here, you can ask it anything.
That's right.
So make it worth your while.
Mm-hmm. So coach, you're coaching at Deal Middle School in the DC area, and you've coached at Bowie State University. Now you're at Morehouse College, and you're flying overseas to introduce the sport to kids in other countries, and you're still doing training and coaching club teams. What's next for you, or is there anything that you feel like you haven't accomplished yet?
When I feel like it gets to a point where every kid has the access and accessibility to enjoy the sport, at the same time, the quality of life, I do believe in the quality of life. You want to live a life that's not just 9 to 5 and go in and check out and stuff. You want to make sure that you live the life that you can be proud of. So if I can do that by helping not just only blacks, whites, Spanish, doesn't matter what color you are, try to bring people together.
Sure.
So every day I get to walk this earth, I'm blessed enough to be able to bring people together through a great sport.
Yeah, no doubt. Well said, man. So at the end of the day, what do you want Ryan Jones' legacy to be?
Just a person that, you know, tried his best to provide lacrosse to everybody that wanted to do it. Try to say, hey, what's that diamond in the rough? What's that kid that's walking the halls, giving him an opportunity when everybody else quit on him?
Yeah.
So what happens when it's the kid that, you know, has social anxiety issues, not a bad kid, but, you know, is going through things, giving them outlet. The best thing about the Alice Dill Middle School program is everybody can play. You cut yourself. I don't make any cuts. The kids cut themselves.
Mm.
You know, boys and girls won a championship last year. We're looking for, you know, to repeat, but I'm super proud and I take on all that. Sometimes it's me with 40 kids, can meet with 35 kids, and you know, the kids really do a great job of not only being, but, you know, bringing their imperfections to it. So really, Coach Jones's legacy is getting every kid an opportunity.
Nice, nice. All right, Ryan, before we wrap up, I want to give you the opportunity to share how those listening can get in touch with you or follow you on your social media platforms for more tips and strategies on how to play this game of lacrosse.
Awesome. Just DM me at Coach Ryan Jones on Instagram. You guys reach out to me and I'll make sure to get back to you. If you guys got clips that you want to send or workout questions or anything like that, please reach out. I'm always here and I'm available.
Oh, for sure. Good stuff, man. All right, Ryan, before I get you up out of here, there's a game I like to play with all of our guests who come on the field called the All Out Blitz. What's wrong, man? Like you're scared. Trust me, it's cool. It's a very simple game. I'm going to ask you just a series of fun questions, and you give me the first thing that comes to your mind. Now, you can explain your answer if you want, but here's the catch. We've got a 3-minute running clock, and you got to get through it all before the final buzzer sounds, which will determine if you win or lose this game, all right?
All right. Let's do this.
So if there aren't any questions, man, you ready to get started?
Let's do it.
All right, I want you to mentally focus like you're back playing club ball at Howard University, all right?
Woosah.
All right, let's do it. Question number one. What does a focus-driven athlete mean to you?
They're hungry.
Okay. Question number two. Best song to get you hyped before a game?
Oh, Duck If You Buck, Cry Mom.
Okay, good stuff. I don't know if that might get you hyped to do a whole lot of other stuff too. All right, question number three. Who do you think is the most competitive? A high school athlete trying to play in college? B, a college athlete who's hungry to get to the next level? Or C, an already established professional athlete?
Professional athlete.
Why you say so?
It's their livelihood at that point. So... it's not like you can make a plan B. You're already in it. So,
gotcha.
Unless you're making KD money or something like that, it's hey, either you do this or you really switch up careers.
Okay, cool, man. All right, question number four. March Madness is here. So, what's your favorite time of the year? Is it going to be March Madness or Bowl Mania?
Dude, May Madness, lacrosse, man. Lacrosse, come on, man. May Madness, a whole bunch of Final Fours in Baltimore, man. Come on.
I will admit that I have watched a couple of those games before in the past. All right? Not necessarily the tournament, but I have watched and kept up with who was the NCAA lacrosse champion, particularly if a North Carolina school or a Maryland school was in it.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Maryland, we're spoiled over here. We got like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They're spoiled. So,
got you. All right. Top 5 lacrosse players of all time:
Kyle Harrison, Chaz Woodson, Lance Carter, of course Jim Brown, and best lacrosse player that I got to personally see play: Sam Bradman. Salisbury lacrosse.
Nice. Okay. All right. And final question. What topic would you like to see us discuss on Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete? And who would you recommend for us to interview that can speak to that topic? But before you answer, your job is to help bring this person onto the show.
Rugby. That was another sport that I played growing up. And I still play to this day. And Old Glory Howard University has a good rugby program right now. But their women's program is doing really great. So I'll work on bringing them on.
Nice. Appreciate that, man. All right, Ryan, there's the final buzzer. So how do you think you did?
I think I did as best as I could, man. Look, I'm still thinking about the whole hype one, man. Go on. I'm finally sitting down. I'm ready to get at it again.
No doubt, for sure. That song would definitely get you hype. But yo, Ryan, straight up, man, big ups to you, brother. You are one of the hardest working coaches in the game right now. So I really, really appreciate you coming and taking time out with us. And I really love what you've been doing for the sport of lacrosse and for the kids in the DMV area. It's definitely, definitely needed, man. So big ups to you.
I appreciate it, man. Bill Jones, tough baby.
No doubt.
Yeah, I'm going to send you one of these down, man.
Please do. And I'm going to send you one of our Focus Driven Athlete t-shirts, okay?
Got it, man. Got it. No doubt.
So look, let's be sure to remain in touch because I'm actually going to be in the D.C. area around mid-May. So let's connect if you're around.
Let's do it. And if we can get this, this is all the start. This is exclusive. Coach Jones, the Jones family baby picture.
Nice. Be sure to post that on our social media platform.
Awesome.
All right. So look, I just need you to do us one final favor. We're always looking to pick up new listeners, so help us get your circle to listen to your episode and to subscribe to our podcast.
Let's do it.
All right. So one last question I ask everyone before I get them up out of here. Do you feel like you left it all on the field with us today?
Absolutely.
That's what's up. That's what's up. All right, peeps. Season 2 is in the books, but we'll be back in May, and you already know we got another great guest lined up for you, so make sure you hit that subscribe button so you can get an alert when a new show drops. And don't forget to share with your friends. Also, follow our Twitter handle at MyFieldGoals and connect with us on all of our other social media platforms. All right, you know what's up. Ryan's getting up out of here, and so am I. We'll see you in about 6 weeks. Season 2 is a wrap. You've been listening to Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete. Stay connected with us by liking our Facebook page, Field Goals. You can also join the discussion on our Facebook group page, Field Goals for the Focused Driven Athlete. Also follow us on Instagram at MyFieldGoals. And be sure to head over to our website at www.myfieldgoals.com to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of our show. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all other podcast hosting platforms. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to having you join us again soon on the field.